I have a couple of questions. I'm going to take up one first. I'll tell you guys about the class. There's been a lot of interest, so I may have to make a separate class just for this retreat. And if you'd rather be in the class connected to this retreat, we can do it that way also. But we'll talk about that in a few minutes. So someone asked me about, you know, what to do when you're afraid to open to the emotional body. And all of these bodies, some people are afraid to open to the emotional body. Some people are afraid to open to the astral body. There's a kind of a mental chatter about what it thinks that body is. And so my suggestion would be to not even try to force it. There's no need to sort of force myself to open to an emotional body when that body's been with you all your life and it's not going anywhere. So there's no need to force it. You can completely go through this entire a map of the bodies and never stop off at the emotional body. There's no need for it. The way to help sort of encourage the ego, the thinking mind, to be able to open to the emotional body is to begin to gradually contemplate the nature of what this body is. The body itself is not emotion. It is this awareness, this knowing that emotion is a part of being human. So what you're actually opening up to is not actually anything. You're not opening to emotions. You're not going to say, you know, we've been holding back emotions our whole life. All of us, we live in a culture where you need to shove that stuff in the background. So there's a fear that I got all this emotion waiting outside in the backyard, trying to get in. And if I open this door, I'm gonna be flooded with it. But that's not actually, that's a mental fear that is cultivated into a image or a thought, but that's not real. In reality, what the emotional body is about. But because we have such a fear of emotions, if we were to open to the emotional body, we could let the emotions come in and run amok, run the place. You know, it's sort of like when you make the mistake of saying, I'm going to have a birthday party for a whole bunch of 3-4-year-olds. And then all of a sudden, when they all get in the house, you're like, what the hell was I thinking? Because they're going to run the place until they go home. Speaking from experience. But the idea is that if you're not comfortable first acknowledging that emotions are a part of being human, then you could let them into your meditative space and they could become dominant. So you do want to cultivate a sense of respect for emotions as a part of being human, as a separate contemplation. And as you grow more sort of respectful and appreciative that we have emotions, then you'll be able to open to this body and allow the emotions to be there without getting swallowed up by them. Meaning that you would, you know, be an ocean rather than a house overrun by a whole bunch of little ones. So that's what I would, that's the way I would start. I would start with this, respecting this fear that you have for the opening to the emotional body. There's no need to push it. No need to make it happen. There's no requirement here. And then practice contemplating or reflecting upon the importance and the value of emotions in your life, the ones that you do let yourself experience. And then gradually you'll be able to open up to this emotional body. It's there, it's for your protection. It's always been there. But we need to not push ourselves into trying to connect to it. So I want to talk a little bit about these subtle bodies. Because when I, so, you know, some of you know me, and I have been a staunch practitioner of deep samadhi for a long time. Like, I got to go to long retreats, and I got to get into the deep samadhi. And I got to admit, I put a lot of striving in that, a lot of energy. You know, I got to sit for hours building up to this level of concentration and samadhi. And if anyone even dared to question how long I was sitting, I wouldn't even listen to that. Like, no, I got to sit this long because I'm building up to a level of samadhi, a level of absorption, a level of concentration. It never dawned on me that that striving could in any way be slowing down my path. Never. I thought the striving was what was giving me the power to sit there for as long as I was sitting. Sort of like a battle with the internal mind. The grasping mind wants to get up, and I'm like, nope, we're sitting right here. You might as well settle in because we're not going anywhere. And then the first time I began to practice with Philip, he did a non-residential in Seattle. It's sort of like the a lot of the early, well, all of the early meditations that you see on his website, Dhamma Wisdom, or even the Nine Bodies website, ninebodies.com, that those are Seattle Insights, kind of like opening non-residential. That was the first non-residential he did, I think, after the book came out. And that was the first time that I knew that what Philip had been teaching me was part of this nine-body system. I didn't know it. You know, when I very first connected with him, it was just through the elements. And then I wanted to study the elements more and more and more and more and more. And then when he came to Seattle in, I think it was 2015, is when I, or maybe he came in 2016 or 17, I can't remember. That's when the book came out. It was 2017. That's when the book came out in 2017, and we began to cultivate this stronger. That's when I began to cultivate the stronger relationship that what I was practicing was the nine bodies. What was striking was how concentrated or how still I could get, even with a guided meditation, even with having done all this stuff. It was a non-residential, so you do all this stuff and you come and you sit down and boom, you can connect to this deep stillness. And I begin to shift my understanding of what this idea of Vipassana practice actually is. And when it came to me, it did not come sweet and pretty. It actually came with a lot of dukkha, because, you know, I was I'm faced with changing my understanding of what I think concentration is. And I think concentration is ardent. That word sounds like hard, you know, alert. This kind of, it feels like this masculine energy of just strong determination. Sit there and don't move. That kind of energy. That's what ardency and alertness and all of these qualities that were taught out of the four foundations of mindfulness, that's what I thought all of this was. I never thought of ardency as this, just this willingness to just be right here, just now, just not needing to deal with later stuff, not needing to hold on to past, and just be right here. And this constant reminder of being willing to be available right here. It's such a feminine quality, even though ardency, this masculine determination, it's all interwoven together, not male, female, but the ardency of masculinity, this willingness to be here, and the gentleness of feminine quality in this willingness. All intersects together. And it doesn't have to be so striving oriented. It just has to be this mindfulness and willingness to be right here. So this, when I started getting connected to the subtle bodies, I made this decision to do this 3 months by myself. I was going to practice with the nine bodies all day, every day. And of course, I said, I saw Philip in a Zoom interview, maybe every 2 or 3 weeks. So first time I saw him, I'm telling him about all the bodies. It's great. I'm loving it. It's all happy, happy, joy, joy. And then at the end of that, I said, I've done all these bodies. I'm going to turn towards concentration. And Philip said, when I told him that, he almost wanted to laugh because I didn't realize I was already concentrated. But I was thinking, okay, now I got to turn toward, this was great, thank you kindly, but now I got to turn to the serious stuff, you know, the real practice, and we'll get back to this after I get concentrated. That's the way I was talking to him. And he said he wanted to say something to me, but he didn't want to disrupt this flow that I was having. So then I decided I'm going to put that nine body stuff down. I'm going to turn towards absorption, get, you know, ardent, get solid, get concentrated. And I can't. No matter how much I strived, I couldn't. I couldn't seem to get myself to stay on this breath because I kept feeling all these bodies, these conscious levels, and I kept trying to ignore that. We got to go back to the breath. That's where we got to stay. It never dawned on me to pay attention to the breath at whatever level of consciousness I was at. That didn't occur to me. I thought I had to leave the nine bodies and go to this breath and do what I knew. And of course, it wasn't working. And the reason why I believed it wasn't working is because I would sit, my usual long sit, don't move. I feel great. Nothing's wrong. I feel fine. Very spacious, like the etheric body and the intuitional body, very still. And then my eyes would just open up and I didn't feel a difference between walking around, doing my walking meditation, getting some tea and sitting down. So to me, I'm not concentrated because I should have a difference. I should feel concentrated and not concentrated and concentrated and not concentrated, but I wasn't feeling any of that. So I kept complaining to my teachers. I think these nine bodies have ruined me. I can't seem to get concentrated. I don't know what to do. And, you know, they were like, well, Tori, you know, this is what you wanted to do. And I trust your mind. We'll figure it out. And I'm having this huge fight with myself. I finally get to Philip about 3 weeks later, and I'm telling him how much doubt I'm having, how much struggle I'm having. And he said, well, invite the intuitional body in and just stay there. So I go back and I'm inviting the intuitional body in. And the intuitional body loves stillness. It loves a contented mind. And we think contentment means everything's going good. But that's not what contentment means to the intuitional body. It just means right here, right now, you're not complaining. You're fine right here. I mean, the whole world can be going crazy around you. But if you are content right here, right now, then the intuitional body is content. And when it's content, it just opens up to this level of concentration on its own. And then at some point, what the intuitional body does is it kind of taps on your shoulder and talks to you. And it said to me, Tuari, how in the world can you sit still? You can't sit still for nothing. How can you sit still here if you're not concentrated? Just think about that for a moment. It's sort of this realization came to me that what I thought concentration was just some mind state that I was creating for myself, instead of experiencing what I'd say samadhi, right concentration is. It's not something that is born out of effort. It's a natural state of mind. And that concentration I had cultivated was this capacity to be aware. And that capacity to be aware, I could carry it wherever I went. I was always aware. And for the rest of that 3 months, it was like the last 6 weeks or so of it, I walked around in this state of awareness at everything. It took this kind of letting go of some of my preconceived, what I think is going on, and allowed the truth of what is true about being human to come into play. This is what I think some of the difficulty is with the nine bodies. Because you do this guided meditation and we can get all the way to this intuitional body in one sit. And it feels so still and it feels so quiet. And I didn't do anything. It's like somebody said, I hate guided meditations, but I didn't have a problem with this one. How is that? That we can get so still in a guided meditation? It's because the stillness isn't something we have to create. It is inherent in the capacity of mind. And so what we are learning in the nine bodies is how to access that level of stillness without all the striving and all of the forcing to try to learn it. That's ultimately what we're learning. And it's all interconnected, interwoven with this subtle body energy. We are very much manifest people. We live in the manifest, and it's the relative world that we live in, this relative reality. And we're so intertwined with it that we tend to mistakenly believe that it is the end all be all. But we don't give the proper understanding to these two additional levels of understanding, levels of being that also support our being in the manifest world. One being the subtle bodies and the other being the causal bodies. So if I look at these subtle bodies for a few minutes, they are not something that we learn intellectually. They already exist. So what we are practicing is learning to access this subtlety as a normal, ordinary aspect of our existence. Think of it like this. One of the main reasons anyone that's gone on retreat, on a residential retreat, one of the main things that you leave with is how still you are at reactivity. Like you go to this retreat and all of a sudden by the end, when you first get there, you're constantly reactive. Dukkha, 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 dukkha. But towards the end, you begin to access this capacity to just be with what's arising. It doesn't mean that you don't feel unpleasant, but you don't get reactive to the unpleasant. You can be with it. And of course, we go home, we lose it, we're caught up in the dukkha, dukkha, dukkha all over again. And we think, I gotta go to a retreat so I can get access to that capacity. Gotta learn it more and more and more. And the more I learn it, now I'm gonna hold it, bring it back with me. And this time I actually got off the airplane and I'm okay. I got through the Seattle traffic, I'm okay. I can hold on to it a week or two before it actually goes. And all of this sense that somehow or another, it was the retreat environment and my hard effort that taught me how to get to that, what is, we now know, it's the etheric level of practice. It's the etheric intuitional level of practice. It's the subtle bodies. We go there, we get a sense of love for all beings. We even care about the ants. We care about everything, all beings. People are moving worms out of the way. I can't believe when I see that on retreats where they got the little stick and they're moving the worms. And I want to ask them, how do you know that worm wanted to go that way? How do you know it wasn't trying to go the other way? And you're like interrupted. But they don't want anyone to step on them. So they gradually move all these little tiny beings out of the way. We think it's the environment that creates that, but it's not. It's the connection to the causal bodies and unconditional love that exists within those bodies. So the benefit of going to a residential retreat, I'm not dismissing that, because as soon as they start opening them up, I'm going on my first retreat also. It's not that. But what I'm trying to say is you can cultivate the connection with the subtle bodies and the causal bodies at home. It is easier in a retreat environment when everything is set up so we can connect to it. But as you begin to practice with it as an ordinary energy, you can begin to connect to it on a regular basis. You don't have to go to the retreat in order to feel the support of the etheric body. It's with you all the time. Our thinking mind just blocks it out. So I'm going to give you some examples of how this can be in a much more ordinary sense. So the etheric body as a subtle energy is this spaciousness. Its qualities are stillness, and there's a quiet that we can begin to hear. Whenever we have overwhelm with emotions, it's a way to think about it is that we use the subtle energies to kind of help us. But mostly we go to the astral body and hide away. But you could go to the etheric body and get a bit of spaciousness around that moment in time. You practice getting to know the etheric body so that you can have a sense of it, so that when you're overwhelmed and you ask into this may this etheric body come and support me, you'll know the feeling of it as it comes forward. So you don't wait until you have an overwhelming situation to learn to bring in the etheric. You practice bringing in the etheric when nothing's going on. But you begin to get a sense of it, a feel of it. You can begin to feel the spaciousness and the stillness within it. You don't need to get rid of emotions if they're held in that spaciousness. If they're held in that quiet, we can both allow, like it's almost like creating a larger space. Some ways you can think about it, like if a kid throws a temper tantrum and you try to clamp down and get that temper tantrum under control, it's less effective than when you actually open up and give more space for the temper tantrum to begin to calm down. That's what you're basically doing. You're creating a wider space to allow yourself to feel what seems overwhelming. But when you create a larger space, then it does not feel as overwhelming, like putting salt in a glass of water versus the ocean. It also, it's not just in the etheric body, but in this astral body, I want to show, give you an example of how I begin to see the astral body as a help. See, I didn't have this sense of traveling. And so because I didn't have a sense of traveling, and when Philip first started talking about the nine bodies, that's the way he referred to it all the time, as this traveling ability. And I didn't have a, I was thinking, you know, people that can transport their minds into other places and, you know, all the, you know, I was out there in the mystic realm, like seeing spirits and mystical. And I'm like, yeah, I can't do any of that. So I would think I just don't have access to it. So I told Philip, I didn't think I had the astral body. Of course, he reminded me I do. I said, but I can't do all that traveling. And he kept saying, it's not traveling like going somewhere to worry. So I would get into these arguments, and I'm a Virgo, a lawyer, you know, arguments are my forte. That's the place I reside in. I love it. I'm like in it. Oh, now there's going to be a big discussion. I'm right there. But I begin to notice that I don't see anybody when I'm in the midst of these arguments. Like we always ask ourselves, how come I can't pull away from an argument? How come I get sucked in with that argument with my sister and I can't pull away? I noticed because I was doing all this nine bodies work, I could see that I was physically arguing with someone, but I was not there. I was, all I seemed to could see was me. I couldn't see anybody else. And Philip told me that is the astral body, that you, that I had left consciously. So my body is still arguing, engaged in this, because basically my consciousness is trapped in a, like a newscast loop of me talking, like a my own echo chamber of saying, this is what it is, this is what it is, this is what it is. And so that's what I'm saying. Of course I can't disengage because I'm too engaged in repeating to myself, you're right, you're right, you're right. And I can't disengage. So when I went to the teacher training, I decided to practice a little bit. So I would start these friendly little banters, you know, just a little pushing here and there, get somebody riled up about something. And then I would watch when I was present and I really didn't care what they were saying. And when I had shifted away and now I'm all caught, and then I would shift back. This kind of trying to see the intuitional body. I mean, the astral body, you don't have to see it as an argument. You could see it when you're meditating and the mind just wanders off to something else, goes over here, and you start thinking about that. That's the astral body. That's that capacity for you to, people will say all the time, I feel myself breathing. I know I'm breathing, but I feel kind of spacey, like I'm not really there. And it's like, you're right. Your consciousness is over here because it's really quite bored with looking at the breath any longer. So you know you're breathing because the body, the manifest bodies know you're breathing, but your consciousness is off planning something. It's beginning to notice that not as a, oh, I'm distracted. Oh, there's that distraction. I need to bring it back and work hard on staying with the breath. But instead, your awareness is on, oh, I'm over here. And then I can bring it back to the physical body. I can be over here. What becomes steady is the awareness. You're aware of where the mind or the consciousness goes. I call it, Philip never uses mind when he's talking about consciousness because he always says, I don't know what the mind is. But I keep interchanging that word, mind and consciousness. So this capacity in the astral body, it is a great support for the emotional body. It does help us when we're getting overwhelmed and we don't have the capacity for spaciousness in the etheric body, we can travel away to that astral body. And it does help us like limit how overwhelming the emotional body can be. But we just have to be careful that we don't disassociate out into the astral sort of subtle realm and we're not connected anymore to the here and now. We're not tethered to this grounded sense of being here and now, because the astral body can take us off. You know, growing up in trauma, I lived in the astral body so much because I was so used to going away and hiding. And so we do have a way of disassociating, and our minds in the reality can disassociate completely and go somewhere else. And I'm not in that space there anymore. I'm not going to be there. And it can be a protection in that way, but it can also be a hindrance in that we are not tethered to the here and now. And we need to stay tethered to the here and now and appreciate the capacity to turn away. This, it's through the traveling capacity of the astral body and the intuitional body that we can get into deep states of jhana, deep states of concentration. Because when you're sitting, sometimes you can feel like you're just spinning in one spot and you're not going anywhere. You just seem to be spinning. How many times have I come back around to that same felt sense or that same thought or that same sort of feels like you're in the same spot? But then other times it feels like you're moving through space, like you're either moving, that felt sense of deepening into the body or deepening into stillness and darkness and space, all of that felt sense of moving into these different layers of consciousness is towards these different layers of consciousness, if you think of them in terms of jhana, that deepening into that sense of jhana is through this astral body and the contentment of mind. So this takes me to this intuitional body. The contentment of mind. Jhana, as I don't know why in inside traditions we don't want to talk about jhanas, like it's not, like it's some foreign thing. It's pretty natural. You can get addicted to it the same way you can get addicted to the astral body. You can get addicted to the etheric body and just drift away. But these jhana states are not foreign to our understanding of consciousness. And many of us who have been on long retreats or just a 10-day retreat have tapped into these jhana states. We just don't stay. We don't know how we got there. We don't know what made it go away. It just was there and then it's not. But it really is this quality of vitaka vichara, this aiming and sustaining, and you can aim your attention at the felt sense of the bodies and sustain your attention on it. That's what we were doing. That's what my job was throughout these sits, was to aim your attention and sustain it, and aim your attention and sustain it, and sustain it on the qualities of the bodies. So many of you may have noticed that you're not thinking about all this other stuff, that you really are focused on what is arising in my consciousness and awareness right now. You're sustaining your attention, and ultimately the factors of jhana begin to come into being. This sense of a contentment in the mind, the stillness in the mind, and out of that contentment comes a sense of joy and that sense of well-being. This intuitive body, that subtleness of the intuitive knowingness, it's like a guide. It knows where we are and how we are. And it's where this kind of balanced discernment comes from, because it takes into consideration the wisdom of the causal bodies, the wisdom of the subtle intuitive energies, and our relative reality, and it then can translate this kind of understanding. That's what we are. That's why I think I love Philip's phrase, well-being that includes non-well-being, because that's the kind of wisdom it is. I may know that something's not totally right now. Everything isn't great and perfect, but I feel this sense of well-being. And it's not like I have to ignore the non-well-being, but somehow that non-well-being is included in my sense of well-being. That's what this is pointing to. Just want to point to one last thing, is this causal bodies. We didn't spend a lot of time in them, but they are that sense of, I don't know. I think it's what the Buddha always referred to as the unborn, the unmade, the uncreated, unconditioned. There's a sutta where the Buddha was talking to some monks, and he noticed that they were interested in what he was saying, and they were kind of like leaning in right there with him. And in that moment, he saw the potential of understanding that would come if he talked about the unborn. Because when we are still enough and we're not in our thinking mind, then we can touch into the felt sense reality of the unborn. Not this imagined unborn, or what we imagine the unconditional could be, because our basic human mind will not let us accept this kind of, I'm not going to be unconditionally loving everybody. There's some bodies that shouldn't have any love. I just don't want to love those people. There's a sense of, there's not a rightness in loving, say, the rapist or the, you know, some of these really volatile, racist people. There's like a, it's not right to love those people. And from our human understanding, that all makes sense. If you begin to feel into the manifest world, you can see why that makes sense, because it's like such an unpleasantness to it. But when you tap into these causal bodies, it's not you that has to love all beings unconditionally. It is the quality of love to be unconditional. And that's what we tap into. And that's why we can begin to, you know, care about ants all of a sudden. It's because we tap into something that already exists. Not me now. Okay, now I've come to accept that there's unconditional love. Because as soon as we pull away or we shift away from that causal body awareness, this sense of unconditionalness goes away with it. So we can have an understanding that yes, there is some unconditional aspect to love, but we lose the direct line with it. It's like we go to the causal bodies to feel into it, to get to know it. But unless those causal bodies are translated in our lives on a regular basis, we kind of lose that ability to know that. The last thing I want to say about the causal bodies is that they give us a sense of something exists beyond the vicissitudes. Something exists beyond this, you know, is it gain? Is it loss? What do I do? Do I get my gain? Do I get my loss? I mean, what do I do? How do I live? Should I accept the loss? What if I want gain? Is there something wrong with that? And all of that back and forth that we do all the time, whether it's pleasure or pain, or whether it's blame or praise or ill will or fame, all of those battlings that we do all the time, in order for us to walk this path of this middle way, somehow we have to have access to understanding that there's more to life than whether or not I get the car or I don't get the car, than whether or not I have enough money or I don't have enough money. It's like there's something more than that. And that's not something our manifest minds can understand or generate. It's an understanding that comes outside of us, the way electricity is outside of us. But we have access through the subtle bodies to that wisdom. I think it's in our DNA, and we have access in this subtle way to access this knowing that exists through lifetimes of experiences of beings. Almost like what I think it was Rita mentioned, that sometimes there's like this emotional energy that comes to you and you it's not yours. It feels ancestral. And that kind of connection to that is also what happens with wisdom. It's not your wisdom. Some wisdom just comes to you because you have access to it in the moment. Anyway, I could go on forever with these bodies. I'm just obsessed with them. Mostly because I feel like they open the door for my practice to be open, spacious, connecting anytime, and not just when I go on retreat. And so when I go on retreat, I have this capacity to work diligently with cultivating them, but I can feel the etheric body even when my 3-year-old granddaughter's having a temper tantrum. I don't have that sense of lost it. So this is what we're working with. There's just one more thing I wanted to kind of talk about. So somebody asked me a while back, I think it was on the retreat I was doing with Philip and Dana, what does this have to do with our Vipassana practice? And it might seem like you're learning a different practice, but as you get past the learning of the bodies. Like, there's going to come a time when you kind of know the etheric body as the etheric body. You don't need someone to teach you this is the etheric body. You know how to access it. You know where it is. You can invite it and you can feel it. You know for yourself. When that time begins to come, that's when you really begin to notice what these bodies can do. Because the whole point that Buddha was pointing towards was not how peaceful can our sits be, but how can we begin to understand the nature of dukkha, the sense of the cause of dukkha, the release of it, and the path itself. Strengthening our ability to rest in these subtle bodies and these causal bodies and this understanding, it's through that intuitional wisdom that we can see, I'm doing this to myself. If that's how I could see, wait a minute, I don't even see these people I'm arguing with. I just see me. I mean, that's a weird thing to say because it wasn't like I was right in front of my face, but they seem black and yet I could see myself arguing. That kind of seeing the cause of suffering, it takes a degree of stillness and stability and quiet outside of the manifest bodies. It takes an ability to be in the manifest bodies in the here and now, but have access to the subtle body awareness so you can see. So you can see the distraction as the astral body and not, oh, something's wrong with my practice. I'm not a very good meditator. Oh, this isn't a good day to meditate today because I'm so distracted. You can just meditate on distraction, watching the astral body move from here to there, and your awareness is just as strong as if you were looking at the breath the whole time. That's what I think the nine bodies offers, is a way for us in the West as practitioners to I think personally, that these are the kinds of practices Buddha was doing and his monks were doing. As part of the Indian system, the nine bodies are what Balyogi came up with. But the idea that there are three levels of understanding, the gross, the subtle, and the causal, that was inherent in traditional Indian practice. So there's no way the Buddha did not know that. And there's no way that he did not have access to that as an ordinary being, an ordinary aspect of him being a man. What I think Philip did through Balyogi is bring that system into the Vipassana capacity so that we can begin to touch into these subtle bodies as a more ordinary part of our everyday living. And with that, we have access to this ability to see the Four Noble Truths in reality, in real time, not in some intellectual discussion. You can feel that dukkha because intuitionally you have a sense of it. Physically you feel it, but you have enough spaciousness from the etheric body that you don't have to run from it. You can stay right here and feel the unpleasantness in its manifestation and know that there is something happening here that you need to understand and stay with it until you get this sense of understanding, this wisdom. That's what I think in the long run, we're gonna begin to open up to with these bodies as time goes on. It's new now, so mostly we just teach the bodies, but I think in time, we are going to begin to teach and open to, I think Dane and Philip are even talking about doing a Four Noble Truths and the intuitional body. I know Dana De Palma is going to do a class on this. So this is where it's all going to eventually go, to this more integrated way of seeing the nine bodies as a level of consciousness that fits squarely within our Vipassana practice. Anyway, I definitely went longer than I thought I was going to go. But I appreciate it. Somebody asked me about images. One last thing. I'll just talk about it during the question and answer, I think. I think I want to just close here and give you some time to ask questions. But before I close, you know, sometimes I can talk a little direct. I don't mean to offend people, but I could offend you in the way I talk or in my actions. I could have dismissed something that was really important to you, or I could have just in my mannerisms did something that was harmful or hurtful to you. So if that happened, then I truly want to ask for your forgiveness and hope that you would forgive me. And if you think that there's any way that you were, you know, like you didn't show up to a sit or something seemed wrong in the way that you related to me, I just want you to know that you are forgiven and we can let that go. All right. So thank you so much for your kind attention. I appreciate it. We'll just take a moment, be silent, let these words go away. Thank you so much. I'll see if anyone has any questions. I see there's a hand already raised. Hold on a second. Jennifer, you have a hand?
Hi, Tawari.
Hi.
You said this is going to be a game changer. Game changer. No question about it. I was lumping it all together, and for whatever reason, today brought so much more clarity between the bodies. And what I realized is that I, and to what you said also, I was already familiar with them all, but I had lumped them all together, and I thought it was my sheer will
that was yes.
allowing me access. So my practice had always been choiceless awareness, you know, if you're familiar with that.
Yeah.
And so I just thought it was my sheer will of focus that then would allow me to gain access to this space, but it would have different qualities. And I didn't understand. And I thought that was external information from the day or, you know, where I was in the moment, you know, emotionally. Anyway, fascinating. This is just paradigm shift all around. Yeah. And then sort of just quickly to piggyback on yesterday, you know, that sort of sensation of the ocean and thinking, okay, yeah, maybe this is my emotional body. With the clarity of today, it's my trauma.
Yeah, that's right.
It's my trauma. There's no question about it. It's just my vitality body is like a really rocky, stormy ocean right now. And it's really draining a lot of my other energy. And so anyway, I just want to say thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, you're welcome.
I did have a question. Did you talk about the ninth? Are there three bodies?
I did not talk about the very ninth body because that one's really unfeelable. It's like the, you know, whatever that crown chakra is that you know it's there, but you don't really feel it.
Yeah.
And so I didn't talk about that ninth one. We just went up to the eighth.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll ask you about it later then.
Yeah, you can always email me and we'll talk about it. Let's see, Sean.
Hi, can you hear me, Tway?
I can.
Yeah, okay. Well, first off, this, thank you so much. I think for me, I had experienced, I think, different of the bodies and different meditations, but I didn't, this is kind of like a literacy. Like I can say, okay, that's what's going on and kind of stay with it more. And I was wondering what you'd recommend, just in you've mentioned in terms of practicing with it, but like if you're going to incorporate it in a daily meditation, would you just go kind of as you did, like up through the bodies and back down? Or how do you recommend working with it?
I think the best way to working with it, mm-hmm, is until you get a sense that you just don't have any need to you know exactly where these bodies are and which ones they are and how they show up, I would encourage you to find on either Dharma Wisdom or the Nine Bodies, find probably Dharma Wisdom, find, or even here, we have meditations here. All those meditations are going to be recorded now. Okay. But find a meditation that sits with you and use that meditation over and over and over and over and over. So you don't have to use just the one that goes all the way up and listen to that. You can listen to a physical body meditation from Philip, one from me, one from Dana De Palma. You can listen to all these different physical bodies and then maybe just do a physical body one, then just do a vital body, which is going to be the physical and the vital, physical and the vital, or maybe the manifest physical body and all the way up to the emotional. You just keep listening to these audios. I used to listen to them every night. Wow. I don't need to listen to them every night because I can actually go through them now. But you can listen to them until you feel completely connected to them. And that is how, once you feel that sense of confidence in that knowing, then they are just going to show up as part of your regular everyday life. It's like all of a sudden you can't unlearn something that you know now. So spaciousness will just automatically come when it believes you're too overwhelmed. Okay. It's kind of strange that way, but you don't have to make it come. Okay. It will come.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Let's see here. Rita.
Well, thank you. I had some issues in the last two meditations. So I'm very much interested in finding a way to do, I'm not a guided meditation person. Thank you. No, thank you. I really know how to meditate. Thanks anyway. But I did find these guided meditations to be really helpful. And I was actually going to kill somebody this morning. And that first meditation to the etheric body just really gave me some space around my, the drama and trauma that I was really prepared to set in motion at any time soon. So that was, it was a surprise and a blessing and wow. I actually, because I had all these technical difficulties with the second and third meditations, I went to Dharma Wisdom. I don't see where there are, guided meditations there. And I also went to Dharma Seed. I did not see guided meditations around these subjects. If you could send me even one link, the group one link just to kind of get us headed in the right direction.
Okay.
I'll post that to the chat.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I would love that. Now I'm a believer in guided meditation on some level, so thank you for that and for your time and your energy and your wisdom over the last day and a half. And I would appreciate that. There it is. Yay. Thank you, Krista. Okay.
All right. I'm done. Perfect. Katie?
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you so You're much. Welcome. I get why this is your favorite thing. really joyful. But my question was specifically around the astral body.
Mm-hmm.
I felt into that like pretty quickly. What I was kind of struggling with was I started to feel really like I was, like you mentioned, like I was kind of floating up.
Mm-hmm.
And then it would feel kind of intense and like I could feel my breathing kind of getting more rapid. So I try to like ground myself down, but then it would go away. And then I'd feel into it again, and then it would be kind of floaty. So I didn't know if you had any tips for how to like feel grounded and like be okay with the floating at the same time and like extend that feeling.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
I think what you're saying is very nice. What you did was very, very nice. You explained it really, really well. That sense of when you start getting a little anxious and then you would lose it. And then you come right back and feel it, call it up again, feel it, lose it. That, I think, is part of the learning process, that calling it, losing it, calling it, losing it. As time goes on, you get so comfortable with that floating feeling that you won't think. Part of the fear is, I think, that the grasping mind thinks, oh, we're going to float away and lose everything. Wait a minute. That's not actually what's going to happen. You haven't left anywhere. You are in the same place. But I do think that we have to practice being with that energy and not afraid of it. And that just comes with practicing with it, getting used to that felt sense of it. And then gradually over time, I can feel that floating energy. It doesn't even feel so much like floating anymore. It feels more like a lightning. I just feel lighter and brighter. And so the quality of it might change and it's not going to stay necessarily the same way. You can tell you're not floating, but that is the way the mind describes what it is experiencing because it doesn't have words for it. But as time goes on, you'll get more and more of a solid sense of what this consciousness feels like, and you will be less and less concerned about it.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, it's funny because my logical brain is like, well, I know I'm not going to literally float towards the ceiling, but there's still some like fear around it. So I'll just keep practicing that.
Yeah, that's it. That's all you need to do. Okay. Mike, hold on a minute. I have a few questions here, a few hands. Eric?
Yes, hi. Hi, Terry.
One thing, Eric. Mike, can you put your hand up so that you're in the row? Can you just hit the, let me see if I can do your hand for you. I don't think I can. I think you have to go to the bottom under the participants and raise your hand. That's all right. If you can't do it, I'll just remember you're after Donna. Okay. So go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, so thanks. Thanks again, Terry. Some of the other callers, I found this is a kind of a game changer for me. I've only experienced some of these either subtle or causal bodies on, you know, residential retreats, and I've always kind of felt guilty asking the guidance teachers whether, you know, how do I continue this, because I've always felt like it's always just come spontaneously. And I think, and I'm not a big fan of guiding meditation as well, but I found that just today alone, every time we've gone through it, I've been able to at least get that felt experience. So I feel like it's something I can keep working with, that, you know, going through the different phases. My question was really, I did notice though, when you were kind of guiding us through right before you got into the subtle bodies, where you kind of go through the physical, the vitality, emotional, then you kind of went back to vitality before you went into, I think maybe that was my analytical mind, like kind of analyzing what you're doing. But is that kind of something that you find it's a good way to approach this as we build this into our own practice?
I think that's the way we actually practice with it, because the emotional body is a manifest body. But the link between physical and vital is very clear, because there's stillness and then there's movement. That link is easy to make. The link between vital and emotional is very clear, because that vitality is what's really supporting a lot of our emotional energy. We can begin to see that relationship. We can see the capacity to have emotions from that vital body. The link between the manifest bodies and the etheric body is actually the vital body and the etheric body. And so what we do is we go to the emotional body, but we have to go back to the vital body in order to experience the energy again, to instead of having emotions as our, or the capacity for emotions as our object, we have to go back to the vital body to get the energy as our object of meditation, and then move from the coarse energy into the subtle energy. That's what we're doing. And that you can move in that energetic way through the spaciousness. I've never tried, even though Dana has, to move from emotional to etheric by just adding spaciousness into the emotions. But you could, because none of these bodies operate by themselves anyway. They're all intertwined with each other. They're really just a hologram, like moving and changing, and like a, what do you call those, kaleidoscopes? It's more like that. It's not really this body, then this body, then this body. That's just the way we teach it, so you can begin to experience it as an actuality and not a guessing. Does that make sense?
Makes sense.
It's the same way with the astral body. We go from the etheric to the astral and then back to the etheric in order to reconnect with that stillness, because the intuitional body has an object of deeper stillness. And that's how we get across to that.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Susan?
Thank you so much, Tweri. I have never been part of an experience like this. I feel like I've dropped into like a meditation. Well, I've never known. I feel like I've never known this, and I've come home yet. Given, I actually have known this. And for years, having these experiences that I was never able to put language to, and even in talking to some teachers about what happened during a meditation, for instance, there was one, my body wants to go all the way, my body wants to go back for some reason. And well, that would be one question about, you know, letting your body be in a position it wants to, because sometimes there is, in samadhi, where my body wants to go, you know, lean back, and it can sustain that for, well, I don't want to get into that, because what I really wanted to talk about was the fact that this language speaks to an intuitive part of being human. And I love the fact that you said this is, you kept saying, this is a human experience. And when you did that, non-self, it for me, is automatically present, because never once did we talk about personalizing, you know, even the emotive sense. So I really experienced a shift in my practice, and even in the sense of when I started to engage in the world outside my house, I understood others as well. It's like I saw them in their bodies. I didn't mm-hmm. see them in their whatever story, it was just, yep. I saw them in their bodies, and it is rocking my world.
Rocked mine too.
So if you open a little camp, nine bodies camp, I want to be there. I want to be part of this more. And this, I'm wondering about this. We don't talk about an inner voice, like actually, you know, because I've heard a voice out of a clearness of mm-hmm. stillness. And what is that touching? What is that?
You are touching the leaning back, and this inner voice are connected to the same body, which is the intuitional body. So that sense of leaning back, what it means is we don't want to lean back, especially our head back in our practice, because the head back in the practice is closing off the neck, and it's more going to be more of a problem. But what I think happens is that this intuitional body is so deep down solid, this is where I am, serious about this, that it can feel like we're being pushed back. But actually, the idea is to see if when you feel that sense of leaning back, can I ground down deeper? That's what it's like you're letting the body push you back, and instead you want to ground down deeper. That's what's happening there. Connected to that is what I think you're referring to as that inner voice. This is my interpretation of what you're saying, because part of the intuitive body is this knowingness. And sometimes it sounds like a whisper, like, don't do that. And sometimes it's like, hey, wake up now, come on. Sometimes it's like that. It's this voice that seems to come out of stillness, but it is clear and absolute. And there's a knowingness to it. And that it's as that's further, you know, it's all, I'm gonna go one step further. This is what I think abuse does to us sometimes, is that we lose our ability to hear that voice. We stop trusting it. Yeah. Almost like it wasn't there when I really needed it, so I'm not even gonna trust it anymore. And instead, we trust what I would call the grasping mind's memorex of that voice. And so oftentimes when I was younger, I'd see a guy and I'd be like, God told me that's the guy I need to be with. And then I'd find out, yeah, no, I don't think God was pointing me to that guy. And then before long, I'd be like, oh, that's the guy God is telling me to be with. Like, no. So there's a way in which the grasping mind can mimic that kind of intuitive knowing.
Yeah.
But this intuitive knowing comes out of stillness, not chaos. There's a felt sense of stillness with it. And when I've learned to hear my grasping mind say these definitive proclamations, they're usually with a lot of noise and a lot of, I don't know what to do, I don't know what to do. And then there's like, you should do this. And then I follow that. This intuitive body, it's quieter. It's stiller. It's more true for that. And so that it's learning to begin to trust that by going into that level of consciousness and spending some time there.
And the unborn, could you also phrase it as the innocent, like the original vulnerability? Before we learned.
Yes, you could do it like that. Mm-hmm. Before we had all that created in there, but it is not of us. It's not our original innocence. It's the nature of the way things are before we start adding stuff on. I think you could say it like that.
Thank you.
Okay. I could go on, but thank you.
I know, me too. Donna. Let's see what you're saying here.
Oh, this just so resonates for me. I'm continually on a search for how to integrate being on the cushion into the world. And this really speaks to me. And I specifically have a question about the astral because I understand how we can unintentionally go there for safety. I'm unclear how we would use it intentionally to help us. Why would I call to the astral to help?
So I think you call, I don't know if I would think of it as call to the astral to help. The astral body does provide a help in our meditative practice, because we can get too heavy, it's too heavy to be in just the manifest bodies. And even the spaciousness of the etheric body has a degree of stability to it. And the intuitional body has a degree of deep grounded stillness to it. So the astral body brings a lightness to our practice that becomes very important, a kind of uplift, uplifting of the soul, uplifting of the heart. And I think some of the joy that comes before you get into these jhana states are coming from this astral body's uplift. And we're still grounded here, but there's an uplift to it that keeps us, and it helps us move through these kind of meditative states and stay, because we're moving. I think we get bored with practice when we stop moving, when we just spin and spin and spin and spin, and we start getting bored with it. But when we're moving and we're watching and we're understanding, and our eyes may be closed, but we're experiencing something, I think that's part of the astral body that helps us move in that way. So that's where I think the biggest support of the astral body would be. But it's also in our manifest world, it's where creativity comes from. It's where this, somebody asked me about the images that come into the astral body. That these are where our, this is how the world gets created. That's why it's so linked with our emotional body. And so beginning to know you're in the astral body can help you not necessarily not see that you're running away from an emotion by going into the astral body as a habit. So you're actually beginning to know, oh, wait a minute, come on back. We can hold this. We can be with this. So it's seeing the habit of running there. Mm-hmm. That we could begin to see. And we could begin to see when we are blanking out, spacing out, disengaging. Those are all ways in which the astral body is moving us away from the present moment. So that's sort of what we're trying to learn to see with this astral body and why it's so important. As somebody asked me during the break time about the images that can come up with the astral body, and we can get a lot of imagery and a lot of our archetypal imagery. It's the body's capacity, that level of consciousness, to take sort of what we kind of begin to understand in the causal realm and help us incorporate that into our own understanding. So it takes, let's say you have this felt sense of appreciation, and you're in this meditation, you have this felt sense of appreciation, what you're gonna see in front of you is maybe some being that you fully appreciate. That being becomes the expression of that sense of appreciation, or fear, or all kinds of images that can come up in relation to what we are feeling, and the astral body kind of projects it out there. There's another way that the astral body works, in that some people are, their way of understanding is through image. And so the image is an expression of their own understanding, or the image might come to them in order for them to understand something. And the way they understand it is through the image. It shows up like in dreams, mm-hmm. and in visions people will have. There's a felt sense, palpable understanding that you're having. That's what's going on. And so that astral body is, it doesn't, you don't have to necessarily say, oh, what I see is what it is. But if you're interested in what you see, you might get quiet and then find your way into the intuitional body to get some understanding around the images that you're seeing. Because the intuitional body is really where you get the understanding. It's all subtle and it's all woven in there together, but it's in the intuitional body that you could bring that image in front and ask into it, what is this teaching me, or what's to be known in this? And you can begin to get some clarity around it.
Thank you.
Welcome. Gene, I'm going to get Mike because he didn't actually put his hand up, but his hand was up. So I'll get you Mike now. You're on mute, so I can't hear a word you're saying.
Okay. Once again, thank you.
Can't hear you.
Can't hear me.
I can now. For some reason, you keep having this blank in sound, but go ahead.
Anyway, throughout my life, I've had a variety of what I call supernormal experiences. Yeah. And I think we all have these. And I really appreciated when you made the comment early on, you've all experienced all these bodies before. And this whole model or framework gives me a context for thinking about these because they're all very different in character. Some of them are clearly ethereal. Some actually seem cosmic, so on and so forth. Yes. And it got me to thinking that I think maybe through this practice, and you, I'm sure you've experienced this, is you've developed an increased sensitivity to when these arise in your daily life. So like, you know, most of us walk around dealing with, you know, our stuff, and then these things happen and we say, oh, what was that? And so anyway, I want to thank you for that. And I think it's a way that I expect if we work with this, we're going to see it in our daily lives. It's going to show up. And I think actually Philip talks about that in his book a little bit about how you'll see these things come up, and very powerful. Anyway, thank you again.
Yes. And you bring up a really important point here, Mike, because it's like I was saying, when I was doing this long, arduous concentration practices, I thought I was doing that. I thought I'm the one. It's me. I got identified. We get identified with our own liberation as if I'm the reason why I'm getting liberated. But that's not actually what's happening. And so when we get identified with these subtle energies, we're actually doing more harm to ourselves because we're limiting the ability of what these consciousness can do. So when you see them as part of an ordinary practice, you can begin to see almost what Susan was saying, the selflessness in this, the non-self in it. It's just human. And you're no more special than any other human in accessing these capacities. But learning to access them so that you can see the Four Noble Truths as a practitioner, you know, one of the, what did Buddha call them? A trained noble disciple versus a run of the mill or an untrained worldling. So there's this trained practitioner, you can begin to understand how to move through the world with it versus the untrained who has the same access but might find themselves getting overwhelmed in emotion and stuck in the astral body because they do not know any other escape. They do not know the capacity of the emotional body or the support from the etheric body's spaciousness or the intuitional body's intuitional knowing. They don't know all of that. So instead, they can get trapped in the astral and stay there, where many of us spent the most of our childhood at. So this is part of our support in coming to an understanding of the Eightfold Path, Four Noble Truths. Okay, great. Jean?
I don't remember raising my hand, but thank you.
Oh, not that Jean. You didn't raise your hand.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. This is Jean Cannon.
Thank you, Tori.
Okay.
I don't really know that I have a whole lot of a question to ask, but more a comment. I'm not really a very intellectual sort of person. I think I'm more physical and movement oriented, and some of this has felt a little like a merry-go-round, and you know, you step off and then you're staggering and trying to find your place. And so the best thing to do is to sit down and recoup. And I think some of that is going to be going on for me for the next several days as I evaluate what's happened. But I have heard some things here, especially since you started with emotional states and beyond, up until, you know, this afternoon, I've never heard before. And they've been very powerful to me, especially the emotional side of it. I kind of think of myself as a kind of an emotional guy in a lot of ways. So that, but there are new levels, there are new experiences, new things brought up. And I have never sat and meditated when I felt that the bell or the singing bowl was an interruption. But there were times this weekend when, what is that bell doing going on?
I know. I felt it myself. I'm like, I gotta ring it. Philip has, sometimes he does hour and a half long meditations and nobody's complaining because you're just right there with him. I felt it myself, you know, that because I knew we didn't have enough time in between the next sit. So I would feel that too. Like, what is this? I can't ring it.
Well, I'm glad because it is a beckoning to return.
It is.
To a different spot. And I can understand its beauty for that and accept it.
I think, Jean, something that you're pointing to that I want to share to everybody. It's like, This is how I put the nine bodies, because I'm learning it from a Vipassana teacher, as a Vipassana practitioner. That things like the understanding dependent origination, understanding the five aggregates, and understanding this Four Noble Truths, in the manifest world, which is how we try to understand it, it doesn't always work. It doesn't make sense. This idea that, you know, this non-self concept. So we try to conceptually explain it, but it doesn't really make sense. And I think this body, this practice in these bodies, is how we're able to understand what the Buddha was saying. And I believe strongly that the Buddha had these understandings already part of what he, when he would say practice in the non-self, it's assumed you're going to get into those subtle bodies or those causal bodies in order to understand that. But we, as a Western way of practicing the Dhamma, we started with that breath and we stay with the breath, and staying with the breath, you cannot understand non-self. You got to let the breath go and rest into a wider, subtler, non-you world. Then you drop the word non-self in there and it's like, oh yeah, it makes sense. Of course there's no self. You know, it's just, that's just the way it is. And so that's what I think the benefit of this is that we can begin to understand our practice in a deeper way.
I just wanted to say, I love the Dharma, and thank you for the way you bring the Dharma to us.
Ah, you're welcome. My pleasure. Okay, we got two more hands here. I have Jennifer too, three more hands here, and then we're going to stop. So everybody else that wanted to put their hand up, it's too late now. Okay. This is for, oh man, I just lost the name. Taeyaki? Is that how you pronounce your name? Taeyaki? That is
Taki.
So, say it again.
Takaki.
Oh yes, I see the K. Oh my God, I love that name. Okay.
Thank you.
Okada,
that's me, yes. Yes. Thank you very much. This was actually first time actually engaging with the Seattle Insight Meditation Society.
Oh, session. Well, thank you for being here with us.
Thank you, everyone, for allowing me to be here. I don't have a question. As I'm relatively new to sitting in meditation, I just had what I experienced very briefly, and that may trigger some thoughts from other people. Yesterday, I was kind of very zoomed in. When I went to the walks, I was sort of looking at trees and feeling like I'm breathing the same air and being in the same sort of environment and very tuned in. And today was a completely different situation, especially once we went into the more abstract, especially sort of stepping out into the spacious areas in the subtle bodies, the etheric. I couldn't do it at all, so I was very jealous when I just heard that people were floating in the air, and I was desperately trying to float. So to compensate for that, I had to walk around and actually just kind of calm myself down, because I was getting very frustrated. I just wanted to share that, because I think I know what to do, and I'm looking forward to sitting next time, but I just wanted to share that and thank everyone here for everything. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I think you're speaking to more than just yourself. I think there's probably been more than just you that couldn't access all of that stillness, spaciousness, all of that. It's pretty, it happens on retreats all the time, which is why I keep having to say you don't have to have any of this. What I want you to hear, and I'm glad to hear that you're still going to try to practice with it, is because all of that access is still there. It hasn't gone away anywhere. This is really about learning to touch into experience as an experience and nothing more than that. It doesn't make you special. It doesn't make you not special. It's experience as experience. And so over time, you will begin to feel into this. And just so you know, I didn't think that I had an emotional body. I can feel it so clearly now. But for a long time, I didn't think I had an emotional body because I kept looking for emotions and I couldn't find any. I didn't think that I had an astral body because I didn't think I could travel. But you can see how my thought of what I assumed it was gets in the way of my ability to even experience it. So you keep practicing with it. And the best sort of encouragement I can give you is to not get caught in frustration. It's more of believing that whatever you're experiencing, that's it. And the more you believe it, the more you will begin to experience it as an experience, rather than trying to, that's why we hate to say what people describe it as. And I try to describe it in more than one way, because you're right. If I said, oh, you feel floating, everybody that's not feeling floating is like, I'm not there because I don't feel that. How do you float? What should I do? Instead, I think it's encouraging that you're going to keep practicing with it, because I know you will eventually touch into it as an experience. So thank you. Okay, Rita, you and then Jennifer, and that's it. Rita, you are muted.
Yeah, I know I'm muted. You're right. My question might be too big given the time frame, but I'm going to ask it anyway, and maybe you and I will have a conversation offline if you think it's too big. So on page, oh, I can't really tell the page. It looks like 52 in Philip's book. In the second paragraph, it says, according to Balyogi, the astral body is where what remains after the death of the physical body resides. It is a non-material realm that is not contingent on having a physical body to manifest. okay, so that's interesting. That's a whole thing. But the next sentence in the last sentence in that paragraph says, the devas and other celestial beings that are described in ancient Asian teachings are located in this realm of existence. Well, I am a Yoruba practitioner, and Yoruba being a West African traditional spiritual path. And there are many divas and spiritual energies there, as well as I've been doing a Bardo's course that has lots of energetic presences. And so I'm wondering if you're able to talk to, maybe it's really too big a idea, about the divas and other celestial beings that are in the astral body realm and how that actually kind of works.
Well, we probably could talk about it a little bit more, but I think there's an easy kind of way. I don't say easy. I think there's a quick way I can help us kind of connect to this, is because when you get into touch with this astral body, you get a sense that there is a consciousness that's not tied to the body. And that felt sense of, it's actually like the felt sense of moving. So one way you could maybe think of it is the way air comes in and out of our lungs as breath, the astral body moves like that. It moves with this ability to on its own, separate from us, separate from the body that we have. And so I would think that the idea of devas or spirits in any way, in any religion, in any spiritual practice, the devas would not need a physical body to exist. And those spirits would be able to move and exist separate from a physical body. That's what I think Bal Yogi is pointing to. Although I don't know about Bal Yogi's religion or any of his traditions. I think Philip was adding the devas because he's Buddhist and he was bringing in the Buddhist understanding of it. Mm-hmm. But any mm-hmm. spiritual practitioner, there in any spiritual practice, there's some kind of spirit guides, and they don't have to have a physical body in order for them to be alive and functioning. And that's what I think the point that Bal Yogi was making, is that the spirit realm doesn't have to have a physical body in order for it to exist. And in the astral body, you have a physical form, but there's an awareness that your consciousness is separate. It feels separate from the body itself. I don't even know. These words are weird words, separate. It doesn't feel like it's somewhere out there and I'm over here. It's not that, but there's a sense that I have the capacity to move and I don't have to constantly be making reference to the body. I do make reference to the body, so I stay in the present moment, but I don't have to. And that's how I think people can disassociate and go into realms and just stay there for a while.
Okay. Clearly a longer conversation, but thank you for that answer. Okay. I appreciate it.
Jennifer, you're the last.
So I love how Rita's question, you just almost answered my question through answering Rita's question, because I was going to kind of jump off of Susan's question earlier about the body taking or starting to move sort of on its own. And I find that when I'm in the astral body, my body moves without, you know, I'm not doing anything. And it's almost as though I'm an organism in a wet environment, or like a tadpole, but it I'm also a dancer, but it will just, my head will start going and it's like swimming. And I just think it sounds like, yeah. And it's because I'm letting go into whatever that sensation is. And then releasing somehow from the physicality of myself. Are there other bodies that have, you know, kind of movement associated?
I think it's probably the astral body. I think I'm probably understanding more of what you were, what Susan would have been saying if it's kind of like linked with what you're saying. There are people that have movement that happens as part of that. It would be the body's expression of this non-local kind of awareness that's happening. And so, yes, I could see it as moving the bodies as same way as images that you see. Where I am not clear, and we'd have to ask Philip for more clarity, is, you know, there are times when there's energetic pushes in the body, like a felt sense of a jolt or I don't know, it feels like it tweaks us back into alignment or something. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's the same thing. And I think that that shifting is coming more from the intuitional body than I think it's coming from the astral body. So I'm not sure though, you know, there's the Kundalini. I think Philip talks a little bit about this in the book, on this Kundalini energy. There's that kind of energy. There's all kinds of felt sense movements in the body.
Yes. And I find that it can materialize actually physically for me. You know, there can be twitching sometimes.
Yeah. I wouldn't just lump them all in the astral body and say that's what it is, because I'm not sure. I'm not sure if all of that movement is the same kind of movement. Mm-hmm. I think some of the movement might be different.
Yeah, I think so too. Different, but the astral body is the clearest for me. It's this liquidy kind of feeling. In my head, like my body really just wants to move to it. If I could dance to it and meditate at the same time, I would.
Yes. And I think if your astral body is tethered to the body and your that creative capacity is part of you, I could see where that's where it would happen. Mm-hmm. There's this tethering between the body and the astral that it would move. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't. You could still have that movement going on and you wouldn't have to necessarily physically move.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
I mean, what I'm saying is you could feel the physicality of that movement, but you don't have to actually have the movement happening.
Yeah.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, I understand.
Oh, yes. I see. Yes. More like the intuition. Okay, you guys, you know, we could go on forever. And, you know, I'm as nerdy enough to stay right here with you. But some people would be like, we should be going now. So let me tell you about this class. So what I want to give you Susan, can you put Cheryl, can you put my email address in the chat? And I want you just to email me if you're interested in doing a follow-up class. And it may very well be that we'll have to do a follow-up class outside of the class that I'm going to do normally, because I think it's pretty much getting filled up. I think there might be a slot or two left, but that's about it. So if you're interested in doing a class, send me your email and let me know maybe the best days or time. So don't give me this specific time, but more like Wednesday afternoons or Thursday evenings or something like that. Just give me the times you could do it and I'll try to figure out, Cheryl and I will try to figure out some way to pick a class that we can actually connect with. It's 8 weeks, so there will be this kind of flow of 8 weeks, and I'm sure we'll come up with something that we can all do. So anybody that wants a class, you don't have to worry about it. We'll make one up for us so that we have it. All right. So good. Thank you so much for your Donna that I've already received, and for all your attentive and showing up for all the sits and your dedicated practice. I really think this is going to be a great help for us all. And so if you ever have any questions or want to know anything about it, you feel free to email me and I'll help you with the bodies in any way I can. All right. Thank you so much for supporting Seattle Insight.